Now, all was well and good until several years ago when a few very powerful platforms stumbled upon an incredibly lucrative business model. These platforms, namely StockX and Goat, empower resellers to artificially jack up the prices of sneakers like these sky high with their tools that basically are tailored toward quick buck artists, resell bots, and other folks that are in it for the love of the gain, not the love of the game. The implications are really, really bad for the sneaker community.
Man, I don't know what the fuck you just said, little kid, but you special, man. You reached out, and you touched it by the heart.
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast is the anecdote. Welcome to the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. I am your host, Sock Jig. You can follow me on Twitter at Sock Jig and on Instagram as well. On today's episode, I talk with Tyler Blake, aka T Blake. We talk about his time on YouTube and why he's not on there as much anymore, working at Concepts and scaling up e-commerce, cook groups, Soul Savvy, and his new group, In This Economy. You know, in the conversation, there's a few topics I've previously discussed that I bring up, but I wanted to hear from Tyler since he can speak on them. Like, he can talk about if all YouTubers are secretly miserable or not. A few notes first. There's some static at times on the recording. That's on me and the recording software I used. I'll probably switch it up and try to find something else. There's a part early on where the recording cut out for a moment or two, and I tried to stitch it back together, But for the most part, it's listenable, it's good quality, but I just wanted to warn that it's not perfect. And I'll be doing some more conversation-style podcasts with guests going forward. The biggest hindrance has been just me and setting up a time to talk. My free time to record podcasts is usually like 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Pacific time, and a lot of people I want to talk to are on the East Coast, so those vampire hours aren't exactly ideal for them either, so maybe I'll interview a few vampires. Ask Count Chocula what he thinks about the 450s. Anyways, here's my conversation with Tyler. All right, my guest today has been an all-around entrepreneur in the sneaker space for many years now. Some of his projects include sneaker deals affiliate site Kicks Under Cost, a Shopify augmented reality app called LevAR, or LeVar. He's also worked at Concepts on the retail e-commerce side, but many of you may know him from his YouTube channel and more recently his group In This Economy. Please welcome Tyler Blake, aka T Blake, on most platforms. Tyler, how's it going?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for the intro. It's going really well. That was pretty good. You know, it's so funny about the LevAR. Like, we thought we were being so smart, and granted, the company was founded quite some time ago now, but the whole point is like LEV and like AR, like leveraging AR. But literally no one phonetically has gotten it. So, you know, it's just one of those things. So, but yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I think most people probably think of, LeVar Burton first off.
Oh yeah. Like, what's this, you know, what are these white dudes running a company called LeVar? You know, who knows, but yeah, it's, been doing a lot of different stuff and, you know, slowly kind of increasing my hustles and passions and pursuits, and a lot of that really came from sneakers. So it's cool to be on your podcast, and you know, I see your investigative work on Twitter and sharing and disseminating information. So I think it's pretty cool what you're doing.
Yeah, I've joked that I'm Sneaker Twitter's independent reporter.
Yeah, well, someone has to be, right? We can't. I can't think of any sneaker publication that you can trust, especially you know, Complex, etc., and all that stuff.
Honestly, that's how it started. I was like, I have these thoughts. And if you see how my Twitter account has kind of evolved over the years, it's just my thoughts out there. No shenanigans, no way to like kind of pump myself up. There's all these tricks and formulas, as you probably aware of on the YouTube side. I've just been, you know, like I said, I've gotten over just by saying my thoughts. So,
yeah. Well, you're cashing in on the socks now. You did some merch, I saw. People were like botting your drop, right?
Yeah, and even that just happened organically because I was like, well, this is my name. Sock Jig is my name, so why, what if I tried doing socks? And I did a run, And honestly, I can only really handle one project at a time. So I don't really have this desire to make this, you know, fashion house or anything. So it's just been this side thing that, okay, I don't have anything else coming up in the next few weeks. Let me try dropping a sock. So that's how I've handled it, really.
Nice. No, I think that's cool when you can get the following to the point where people are starting to kind of ask for stuff organically. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the stuff I mentioned that you've been working on, there's probably five or six more that I didn't even mention that I know you're working on. I know you're working on like houses. One thing I wanted to mention is I actually got my Stash Spiridons off you on your Come Up Store site.
Oh, nice. Were they signed by him?
They were not signed. I was hoping they'd be signed, but they were, I think they were like $100 even under retail. And, I was happy to get them. I still wear them all the time.
Oh, nice. Yeah. There was a period of time, where I really was getting into like moving like really brick product in bulk. And I mean, I wish I could go back in time. Cause like, this was also when even like the really GR SBs, I mean, you couldn't give them away. They were so difficult to move.
Right.
But yeah, the stash joints, those were, yeah, man, I probably sold like 400 or 500 pairs of those. That was a tough one. I thought that colorway and shoe was so, so cool. And it obviously kind of flopped at retail, but.
It was, I think not as many people were aware of his previous like 95s and other stuff that he had done. And so he was coming back with Nike, and I don't know if it wasn't managed right on the brand side. They didn't create enough, you know, energy, as they call it.
Yeah.
But I think if the same shoe dropped now, it's 2 years later, it's totally different now than it was back then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for Stash. I mean, we did a lot of projects with them. And also, like, even before, like, when I was up in Boston for school, Stash was, like, really affiliated with Concepts and doing stuff with Bodega. So there was a surprising number of, like, I remember attending, I think, like, a Hennessy event where Stash, like, customized. No, it was Tito's vodka where Stash, like, customized the bottles. So I'm actually looking at an original piece of artwork from Stash that I bought when he was raising money, like the early stages of COVID-19. Right. But the problem with Stash is like, not the problem, but like if you're buying stuff to like invest, is I don't think he has any gallery representation. He's just doing everything, you know, solo. And it's really the galleries that are, you know, colluding and setting the prices and pumping up the artists. So, you know, in a certain sense, it's kind of cool that Stash has stayed so independent, but, you know, he just doesn't have the same like marketing star power that, you know, even though him and Cause were kind of doing graffiti around the same time, right? Like Cause trajectory was a lot different for those reasons. So, but damn, yeah. Well, thanks for your $100, dude. That was great. Appreciate that.
Like I said, I still wear them. I really appreciate it. So, you know, how did you get into that area where you have 400 pairs of Stash? Was that like, you don't do that now, I know, but was that just from your retail experience, from working with brands, from, you know, people like Futura or Stash or whoever? How did you get into that kind of stuff?
Well, I had a lot of experience with basically like doing the line sheets or buys. So I would be in meetings where Nike's like rolling out their products. And in addition to that, in the Boston area specifically, I actually learned a lot from, there's two Asian guys. One of them owns a huge store in LA that I can't remember the name of. And he just opened another store in China. His name's Green. My point being is that these guys were really, really early on a lot of product that ended up, you know, blowing up. So like I was selling a lot of like really mid like product junk, like SB product no one wanted, and it was all going to China. So like those guys are about a year and a half ahead of like when I saw trends really hitting in the United States. So it's kind of like using their, like what they were asking me to find, I was kind of using them as like my canary in the coal mine for buying stuff. But generally speaking, I was really just doing a lot of brokering. So like the Stash thing, the reason why you saw that on the website was I probably didn't have someone that could take 100% of it, but for me to get the best pricing, I had to just take on that volume. So maybe I sold half of it to one buyer and then like worked out the math of what it would take to ship it myself. But, you know, I'm like very opportunity obsessed. So like when I am getting offered, you know, bricks or whatever it is, Actually, someone texted me that they had a bunch of drones that were bought from some sort of a warehouse at closeout. And I just brokered dollars of retail drones to some guy that's going to do drop shipping. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's sneakers. I've definitely learned is like the under retail product. It's a lot bigger of a market and also in a certain sense, less competitive than what I think like some of your listeners that are doing like botting and going after. You have to think, you know, you could be making just the, you know, just as much margin as you would on some of the high-end releases. So is like all your skills kind of build on each other. So it's like, it doesn't really matter if it's patio heaters or Nike SBs. Like if you understand, you know, the things that you'll need, your needs don't really change in terms of like making the deals happen or getting it to the end customer. And then it's like, you know, what's next? Like where else are there opportunities? So, you know, being opportunity obsessed, I think, is a really cool and powerful thing. And I think there's just so much, entrepreneurial spirit in the sneaker and clothing like resale game, like inherently. So it's a cool space to be in.
Yeah. No, I see on just on Twitter, people go, you know, they get into cards, for example.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, they get to a certain stage on eBay and then, you know, they're looking at the Amazon FBA, I think it's called the business program that they have. Yep. And they start scaling up, like that's what you said, building one skill on top of another skill. And I don't see that many, you know, getting to the point where they're, you know, getting container stuff in, but I'm sure there are some. Is that what the goal of in this economy, your Patreon Discord is to kind of get people to that next level of, you know, beyond just having a storage unit full of sneakers?
Yeah. So I think, so one of the things that I got started in Discord was, so like I had someone on Twitter like call me out because I was selling one of my cars on Twitter and they were saying that I was going broke for it, which, and I'm like very, very competitive and like I like negative things to motivate me, which is something I'm working on. But this person had like their information for their Discord group and their bio, and like I took a really deep dive into Discord as a platform, and we might touch on like, you know, the time I was on YouTube, but one of the things that was really frustrating for me on YouTube was there were a lot of people that like were interested in what I had to say and also like kind of aligned with the vision where it's like, I don't want to just review sneakers. I want to like teach tangible skills, because for me, it was like, you know, growing up, my dad's a construction worker, like my mom, you know, we're not really making money where I'm learning stuff about finances or credit or anything. And then it's like, once I got to college, I was like, oh my God, like these like really rudimentary things that I wish I had learned earlier could have really positively set me up for success. Like what if I was doing these things even a year earlier, right? So I wanted to start putting out more content on YouTube dedicated to some of the stuff at business. I went to Babson College and around the same time I was doing a lot of guest lecturing and I was working with some of the faculty over there to actually help teach a class. And then COVID-19 happened. And around that same time, you know, I'm looking at Discord and I just felt it could be a really cool platform to kind of get this, you know, this want to teach off the ground. And then I also really disliked how some people that'll do like guru coursework, it's like they'll sell you something and then they, you know, they kind of like burn you on it, right? It's like you don't get like a follow-up from that person, like it's not very to you.
There's a formula for that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. And but that's the thing. It's like, I'm not an idiot. Like I understand what I could be doing, which is, you know, writing up some bullshit coursework, putting enough ad dollars behind it, getting enough eyeballs for it, you know, pricing it where, you know, my CPA, you know, I'm just basically, you know, to a certain extent printing money against it. But that wasn't interesting to me. And also I was coming into making this content saying, you know, how can I make this accessible for people? Because it's something where I didn't need it to be my livelihood. And I think setting up the group that way, where, you know, I do a ton of one-on-one consulting stuff. I'm like working on guys, you know, that are growing their businesses. You know, one of the guys when he first started was going through the process of starting his own franchise for a UPS store. Like I probably spent like 5 or 6 hours with him helping. You know, and what I bill people for consulting like just doesn't make sense for you know, someone that's like young and aspiring just to learn. So like the group in a certain sense is like crowdsourcing the time and energy that I, you know, can then give back to them in a really personalized and tailored way. And over the years, it's really evolved. I mean, I thought it would be cool to have the group. And, you know, at the time, like a really good month on YouTube was paying me like $2,000. And that was probably like 40 hours of, you know, making videos, editing, posting. And I was like, man, like if I could just switch gears and like get 50 people to pay, you know, $20, like that $1,000 would be enough for me to,
right,
you know, put aside the time. And it's like, I much prefer this to YouTube. Like I was the kind of person that was always replying to the comments and everything. And,
comments are, you know, a sign of, like I've always said, these haters are usually often a sign of success. And if you're going to put yourself out there, there's going to be people taking shots at you, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's what people forget is like, you know, I just turned 28. I've been on YouTube since I was like 17. There is literally nothing that anyone can say on the internet that's going to discourage me or put me down. And, you know, I like rising to the challenge, and you know, at this point it's like, hey, I know what I'm providing is valuable, and I have a lot of love and passion for the group and what I'm putting into it, and it's something I'm tremendously proud of. And you know, I don't being grounded with those kinds of things, I think it's just made this like a wonderfully positive part, you know, of my life, and also I think really positive for the people that have been a part of it. And the other thing people don't understand, I think too, and I wasn't trying to be on the podcast talking too much about Discord, is I've had some critiques where it's like, you know, your group doesn't offer this, this, and that, right? When it comes,
do you have a card mod?
Yeah. But what people don't understand is like, I want you to be able to join, like to learn the skills. And if you find, and if you get the bug, like, you know, we're teaching investing. There's tons of Discord groups that will just do calls, stocks, investing. They're, you know, $30, $40, $50 a month. You know, same with trading cards, right? They're super, super tailored. My whole goal is to like help people that are wanting to learn. Cause like, if you go into the chat section of any of these servers that are super tailored, half the shit is just like literally shit posting and trolling. And the other half is like, not really the environment where you want to be like asking like noob questions. You know what I mean? Like you kind of get eaten alive. So it's like, hey, here's like a really comfortable space to learn all this stuff. And guess what? Like after a month, if you feel like you're ready to go move on to the next thing, I'm not trying, you know, I'm not trying to keep you here. I'm not worried about retaining. I'm worried about whether or not that person feels like, you know, they've learned something that they can you know, start kind of like leveling up their hustles and goals. And part of that is, you know, getting into one of those servers where it's just cards and they have the best monitors, and it's a, you know, or getting into one of the servers where it's just stocks and options. But I think it's so cool. And a lot of these group owners I've talked to and I work with, and I think there's just so much wonderful things happening with these groups and the people that are running them. And it was kind of cool to kind of like stake a place in it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always said is have a group of friends, have a group chat. Do all your sneaker stuff there. Keep it local. Keep it small. You know, there's probably breakout groups within your group itself. And a lot of them are friends that I have just came from a monitor group that I was in as well, too. And, you know, like you see these things about, like, men's health and stuff like that. I know women are in there, too. But, like, just rely on your group. A bunch of friends that you've made over the last year, go talk to them about your struggles, or, you know, whether it's whatever cards or those sneakers that you bought or whatever, or like real life stuff. It's like you can rely on these relationships you've made. You know, the joke is always, you know, I'm here for the friends and not really the sneakers, but it's totally true. You are sometimes here just for the friends and connections that you make.
Right. No, and it's a really good point you made about like the relationship aspect of it too. Like the guy that runs Sneaker Twitter, I've gotten pretty close with, and you know, we've talked a lot about mental health. It's something I've really struggled with, and I'm still like learning to deal with. And I think that you know, what I'm trying to do, especially with the group, right? So like I have, you know, so many people that are paying, but also like over 7,000 people that are free. And I'm putting out content for free every month. Like this last month, you know, I literally built out a habit guide and a schedule guide, and like a food diary. So stuff for tracking and making change in your life and journaling and kind of like trying to lead by example, saying like, hey, like, this shit's really important. Like, don't forget about yourself during this process when you're making money. Cause like I've been to that point where I thought like, oh, if I only make this much more money, like I'll feel better. And it's like, that's not really that. First of all, that's not even the solution. And also like, you'll just have that increasingly empty feeling the closer you get to reaching whatever, you know, monetary goal it is. And, you know, to be able to stress some of those things and stress the relationships and, you know, stress working together, you know, I think it is something that I wish, and other people do it too. But I think like when you are in a position where you have people that are following you and willing to listen, it's like, you know, if I can offer some sort of vulnerability that, you know, encourages someone else to make a positive change, you know, helping their mental health or other people in their life, I think that's pretty powerful too. And I can't see that, you know, going away. Yeah, I'm trying to be one of those people on social media, like when a lot of the civil unrest stuff was happening last year. And, you know, a lot of influencers are scared about, you know, fucking up their check or follower count. And I think that, you know, as I've gotten older in this space, it's like, it's just not, you know, you just kind of got to be real. It's not really worth, yeah. You know.
No, I'm older. I'm 43. So in my group chat.
Yeah, you're 43?
Yeah, I'm way older. Yeah, I've seen a bunch of stuff.
Youthful voice.
Yeah, so in the group chat, I'm, you know, the dad voice in there sometimes because a lot of my friends are way younger. And I'll say, you know, I'll say things like, you know, just share whatever you're thinking in here. You don't have to keep it to yourself. Or I'll say the opposite. I'll be like, go to Vegas and blow your money. You're going to have a great time, right? Because a lot of people do that too, where they're caught in this hustle and culture world a little bit too much and kind of not living their youth. I had a blast when I was 20. I was not a hustler or that type of personality back then at all. So you can change, you can grow. You should be, you know, who you want to be. But and the other thing I've always said on this podcast is these companies, they don't give a fuck about you. Only people can give a fuck about you. So that's why you should, you know, look out for it and try to make those connections with these people.
Yeah. No, totally, man. And I'm looking forward to now that, you know, COVID's lifting. Like, I've floated the idea. So one of the things that I did relate to this series before, during the YouTube times, was I did a really large scale sneaker event at Gillette Stadium. So I have a lot of background with event planning and coordination. And I think that, you know, if you look at all these pockets of Discord groups, like, I think that it is just such a gigantic category. Like, and I mean, look at Soul Savvy, right? Like, they're able to kind of like bullshit their way towards raising money. But like, anyone that's in a group knows that, like, what they're doing is like the corporate version of all these hundreds and hundreds of groups that are like full of like ambitious people like out there. And I think that,
yeah, I've just said, hard, I've said they're a white hat cook group is what they are. Because most of these Discords are wearing the black hat.
Yeah, dude. Oh, man. I didn't realize that I knew the guys that founded that company until they put out their thing. But yeah, dude, it's anyway.
Honestly, I know them as well, too. I've been in the group. It's totally, it's a cook group with white hat. And their thing is they have a stance on resale. So, you know, the idea is there's way more non-resellers out there than resellers, so let's market towards them.
Yeah, no, I think that their approach is really so, like, trust me, I understand their approach in a certain sense. It's like how I decided to run my group, which was, I'm not trying to go after the person that knows everything. I want to go after the person that sees someone tweeting out their successful checkout using, you know, Balco bot or whatever, and it's like, what the fuck is that, you know, what's even going on there, like, what is Discord, that sort of thing. And then, you know, on, you know, pulling back the curtain on what's going on, I guess. But yeah, that's their approach too, which is, you know, there's so many people that, because they don't know what's going on, you know, can kind of get led into paying $33 a month, which I think is astronomical based on my understanding of what they offer. You know, but they built a really strong community. And, you know, if you read any of these books on, you know, marketing and retention and how people behave in groups, it's like, you know, they're just pushing through the marketing buzzwords to make it happen and raise money. And I don't think that's sustainable. And I also don't think it's any sort of legacy that I'd want to be part of.
There's this book, it's coming out. I think it might have released this week, actually. It's called Cultish, the Language of Fanaticism. And it's by this linguist. And she's basically talking about how groups will use certain language and terms to build a community, to build an ideology, to build this us versus them attitude.
Right.
Because once you attract those kind of customers, they're going to be your customers for life. Like the one of the, I think the example they use in the book is Peloton. And you know, there's certain Peloton stuff and sneaker has their own terms. Like a normal person is not going to know what dead stock means, for example. But this is, you know, very company specific and,
Peloton, they had those treadmills that like, I think like someone died getting stuck underneath it. And the people that had the treadmills were like, I don't even need to send it back. It's okay.
Yeah. So the part that I disagreed with what they're doing, if they were saying out here that, hey, we're just a group trying to do something different from the chaos of the sneaker world, come join us, we're friendly, we'll help you, that kind of stuff, which they all do. That's no problem. Like, who has a problem with that? No one. It's this, right. This they've created this mythology of we're going to save sneaker culture. You guys are, you know, like you're, it's like a preacher trying to say you guys are all going to hell unless you come follow me and what I'm saying, right? So I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't want someone, one, moderating my behavior if I resell or not resell. That's just kind of anti-human nature. If you say StockX is evil, StockX is the bad guy, then you're going to attract the people who do that and they're going to follow you.
Right. Right. And that is totally a crowd. I mean, there's a lot of like old heads and also like, you know, I would just be targeting everyone that's like whining about sneakers on Twitter, you know, every Saturday when it's trending, you know, or someone will just have some ridiculously bad take as to why they didn't get the shoes.
Yeah. I say they focus on, you know, the Nice Kicks IG commenters, everyone who's commenting on, you know, the sneaker news or Nice Kicks Instagram post about a drop. That's their target audience.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know how many of those people there are, though, and I don't know how many of them are going to pay $33 a month, but you know, it's whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, you can have a company. If you can provide value, but I don't know. I just don't want someone talking down to me as if they know everything. And like, I do this, I don't get paid anything. Am I bad for sneaker culture because I resold a bunch of sneakers? I don't think I am, right?
Yeah. No, it's an oversimplification of a very, people like very simple presentations to problems that are, you know, a lot more complex than, you know, they might think. So.
Yeah, the part that just made me laugh was that venture capitalist guy saying,
"Yeah,
you know, I believe in community, not these evil market people who sell shoes for whatever price that they want." It's like you can go on StockX and sell any shoe, list any shoe for $2,000. It's not going to sell. But
yeah,
this guy's like straight up lying to us.
Yeah, a venture capitalist feigning altruism minute and a half video with his VC group, you know, repeat pattern as the background behind him was like, it was pretty cringy.
You're saying for the love of the game, not the gain. It's like,
yeah, the love.
What is a venture capitalist other than someone who wants gains? Yeah.
Meanwhile, this guy for a living is trying to like look at something and then make it 100x the value.
Yeah,
dude, trust me. It's, but you know what?
I bought something and bought it for this price, and then later I'm going to sell it for this price. Yeah. Am I talking about a reseller or am I talking about this guy?
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm pretty cynical about, like, I try not to think too much about this stuff, because when you start really unraveling a lot of these things, it's just like, you don't really want to see how the sausage is made. You know, what's another saying like that? Like, you don't want to meet your heroes, you know?
How the fudge is packed.
Yeah, trust me, dude. Like, anyway.
That's a good segue. I wanted to talk about YouTube. And, you know, there's a big period a few years ago where YouTube, ShoeTube, or whatever was pretty big. And I didn't really follow it along all that much, but I definitely watched a few of your videos. You know, what caused you to kind of step away from that? You kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but what was the thing where you said that, you know, this influencer or YouTube star thing is not for me?
I think that. So here's something that was kind of, I guess, interesting about it, right? Is like, there's someone might be hearing this saying that I walked away from it because I fell off and I was washed, which might be like somewhat accurate. It was definitely tiring. But more than that, for me, what I started realizing with the content that was doing well was these people that I knew in real life were playing a character and in a lot of ways portraying themselves in a way that I couldn't get behind. And I knew what I could be doing with my videos to get the views and keep it going and stay in the rat race.
The formula.
Yeah. I was like, I can't do this. I gotta, you know, the videos I'm making, they're going to be on the internet for a long time. You know, I'm not gonna, I guess I threw a Supreme brick off of a balcony, but that was more something I was doing some more, that was more satire than me trying to break something to get views. But, I guess at that period too, I was also kind of doing satire on like how ridiculous things were getting, where it was like people were putting stuff in a microwave, you know, and on the same note, the amount of replica sneakers that were entering the YouTube review space was staggering.
And honestly, when I look now, I just assume if they got an early pair, unless it's like Seth Fowler went to Stadium Goods or something like that, some of these other guys, I just assume it's a fake pair.
Yeah, I think people don't like, and I've even seen this the last couple of years, and talk about a cult following, like the people that do the rep stuff, you know, they're not B, you know, they're actually B grades, or they're unauthorized, like people, there's so many words around what they are, but it's like, they're not real. And worse, you know, some people turn around and sell them for full resale, sell fakes for full resale price, essentially, right? You know, like right. A guy in Boston had a bunch of the 7-Eleven dunks that are clearly reps, you know, where people, you know.
And tell that story, though. You can say they made all these pairs and then the drop got canceled and now I got them.
Right? But it's like when you talk to these people and they don't know what a bill of lading is and they don't understand, like, trust me, there's stuff that'll leave the factory. Like, you know, I had a really great experience with Adidas and, you know, talking to John Wexler, who's someone that it was a wonderful influence in helping me really make good decisions when it came to thinking that I wanted to work in the sneaker industry. But it's like, people have no idea, really. There's only a couple people that really are in that space dealing with, you know, stolen product, and it's not the dude that's getting a size run with no boxes here, you right. know.
Fell off the, you know, the truck in Memphis or something.
Yeah, dude, trust me, how many times, oh yeah, it got stolen from someone in Memphis. It's like, huh, yeah, did it? Like, do you know how they track their inventory there, like with you know, Bluetooth and everything? Like, I don't think they're coming off, you know, the back of the truck in Memphis anyway. But that really permeated the YouTube space. And now it's like, I can't even compete because, you know, even being able to get early pairs from boutiques in Boston, you know, I got someone that's got the fake version 3 weeks before it's actually, you know, hit a retailer store, you know, and it's like.
And those early videos are the ones that make that money, right? Like you said, the $2,000, the in-hand look of the new Yeezy 450 or whatever.
Right. Or back then when the early 350 colors way. And if you look at my channel, those were some of the good videos. And the best part about doing them is, you know, you get the people in the comments saying that they're fake or early. It's like, no, dude, like, you know, I got these, you know, I got the packing slip from Adidas when they left. This is back when Adidas was shipping Yeezys in a box that had on the exterior of the box the style codes and oh my God, that was a huge, stuff definitely got stolen back then. That was a huge problem. But the people playing a character, and then it started to kind of become about pranks. And I was also like,
oh yeah, the getting into the bathtub of Kool-Aid. It's like, what does that have to do with sneakers?
I you know, or eating fucking Oreos out of your Oreo shoe. It's like, listen, I was like, I'm very quickly going to be a grown man here, and I don't want to have to, first of all, trying to stay relevant is not sustainable. Right. Like, think of even like a really famous, successful singer or artist that's had like a tremendous career. Right. Like, their relevancy window, you know, maybe 5 years. Right.
Yeah.
Which is still great and incredible. But it's like, even at the highest level, it's like, you know, people around, even professional sports, same thing, right? So for as a YouTube personality, when we got the guys that have been doing this for 10 years, like I also just kind of wanted to get off of the hamster wheel, so to speak, and be like, yo, like I need to start coming up with a side hustle or spending the time that I'm spending on YouTube and putting that energy into something that's sustainable for the long run versus, you know, busting my ass to make $1,500 a month and dealing with, you know, hate comments and stuff like that. And yeah, just
especially, you know, women in that space, I just can't imagine what's going on. And yeah, sometimes when I look at, like, when I follow a bunch of YouTube, you know, sneaker YouTube people on Twitter, a lot of what they talk about is just actual, like, being on YouTube and, you know, chasing the algorithm or how they create content. It's kind of like the inside baseball kind of stuff. And to me, I was like, just not interesting to me. I just don't care about what YouTube did about their formula. And it's almost like that becomes the content itself. And I've seen the, you know, YouTube videos itself like that as well.
Right. Yeah. But I think the key takeaway from there, and what I try to encourage people that are interested in the space, is like, wherever you're making the content, you know, own that distribution channel. So like now there's a lot of really good tools. I forget what the name of the, is it Substack? There's some way, like, for now, newsletters and
newsletters, yeah.
And Gumroad and Patreon. It's like, you know, fuck these companies that are going to, you know, at the drop of the hat. Like, can you imagine working to get over 100,000 subscribers? And then it's like, you post a video and there's like, it's getting, you know, two or 3,000 people are seeing it. Like, what a farce, right? Like the companies that the social companies are constantly moving the goalposts, and you're having to adapt on the fly to make your living. I just think that,
yeah, someone reported a bong in the background, and now your big video is demonetized or something like that.
Right, or you get a, you know, a takedown request for something, you know. But don't get me wrong. Look, like, some of the guys that I know are still in it are doing extremely well for them. Actually, they're doing so well, I feel like I'm missing something. But it's incredible. You know, I mean, like, my friend Harrison, I think he just got picked up by like Mr. Beast's team. So it's like, you know, there's some of these guys that stuck it through and they're having like incredible, you know, lives, but like, you know, they really, really stuck it through and worked. And I'm glad that it happened for them. But on the other hand, you know, there's some other people that worked just as hard and it just didn't work out. And now it's like you're 25 or 26 and you've been doing this obscure social media thing, and you know that was your job, and now it's like, man, like I'm, you know, being 20, you know, or being like almost 30, being like, man, I have to go get a real job. Like, what does that even look like now? So
yeah, honestly, like I think I've mentioned this on a previous podcast, it's like some of these guys, they look miserable. I can tell they seem miserable. They don't really care about whatever new, especially if they got seeded something, Under Armour or something, you know, second or third tier. And then I was like, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you mentioned Wex and Adidas. You know, you can see Wex, you can see on his face that he looks like he's a happy guy, he's a grounded guy. He's always smiling. Did Wex and Adidas approach all these YouTubers back, you know, during their big Ultra Boost Yeezy phase about you know, showing shoes, about the resale market? So you kind of alluded to that, right?
Yeah, so I have some insights there. So first of all, for quite some time, Yeezy and the shoes entirely separate from Adidas Originals. They, like, you would be shocked at the amount of, like, the lack of information sharing between organizations. Yeezy Supply, totally its own beast as well. It's pretty complicated, actually. I would love to read what sort of contract Kanye worked out, but you can definitely tell he learned from his Nike contract there. So as in terms of hyping up Yeezys, I don't know anyone in the sneaker review space that was getting seeded that sort of product. Now, when it comes to Originals, Wex was too high up to be doing seeding. So it would go to like Adidas Entertainment. They have an office out in LA. And I know some of the people there that are in charge of seeding tastemakers with different products. So that's why you'll see some of these guys will get the Pharrell friends and family. I personally got sent like a 1 of 500 Adidas NMD that was in a Ramoa suitcase. And like, I mean,
the New York City one or
like, yeah. And like, I grew up having like, you know, we'd get some fucking suitcase from like Marshalls on sale. So I didn't even know what Ramoa was. And that is the only thing I regret selling is I sold the whole kit to some dude. And I wish I'd kept the suitcase because now I'm finding myself like, man, that would have been such a wonderful thing to have. But I digress. What I'm trying to say is that, these guys are actively trying to put the product, into the hands of these influencers, but not just the people that are doing sneaker YouTube, you know, all facets of, you know, mommy bloggers, the people that are making content where, you know, they just getting the product is enough for them to post about it. And Adidas at that time when the Ultra Boost and NMD was really, really that hot, like it was like the clout to be able to say you're getting suited by Adidas. Whereas like if Under Armour wanted me to review the fucking, oh my God, what was that Steph Curry shoe that was like, they did like an elevated material Steph Curry shoe. You know, it's like, you guys are.
I remember the dad shoe one. That was a big meme for a while.
Yeah, the dad shoe one. You know what? Let me Google it because this is going to be Under Armour because I actually did this activation. Under Armour Curry Premium. Let's see here. You know what I mean? So like, the brands are trying to go to these people to launch. Yeah. Oh my God. Look, I just found it because it's, these are my photos. I actually took of them. It was called the Curry Lux Low, the Curry Lux.
Oh, the suede, and it's all over suede, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I see it there. Yeah.
Yeah. These were terrible. Yeah. Adidas is, and all these companies are actively trying to get the, use these people as social currency to reach the audiences that they have.
I see it. I'm honestly surprised more don't jump off the hamster wheel and, like you said, and kind of do their own thing. But you said there's people that you do know that are the cream of the crop at the top who are still probably making decent money at it. So, you know, that's, I assume, the goal at all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and to a certain extent, like I was kind of like a lot of these guys I'm still very close with and I talk to all the time. Cause I was like, for better or worse, like I was like the business person in the sneaker YouTube community. So I was kind of tapped or, you know, I would help some of these guys with making extra money monetizing. Right. So like, you know, a lot of these guys didn't know anything about affiliate linking for their videos, you know, just opening up that channel for them.
Right.
You know, it's the little things where, you know, you can be charismatic and have an awesome channel, but have no clue how to run a business or how to negotiate, you know, and ask for, you know, like I recently just dusted off my influencer hat and went down to Georgia, Atlanta for an eBay, you know, watch authentication, you know, project. And I'm like, I'm fucking washed. But it's like, you know, some of these guys, I'll help them review the contracts so they can get, you know, the biggest bag possible, because it's like these brands have the money. They're just all about, you know, trying to milk people for the least amount of money possible. So I was trying to help as many people as I could. You know, Fomer Simpson, Mike, he's someone that I really enjoy, he's doing a really great job with Patreon and just making the content there. So a lot of these guys grown with their audience and understand the different ways they can make money. But, you know, for other people, it's like, you know, kind of like taking it week by week, just hoping that the content hits. So,
yeah, no, I remember hearing someone just looks at search trends and what are people searching for and then makes videos on that. But then it's also got to align with what they actually know and do. Like if people are looking on how to search, how to style foam runners or how to style, you know, hot dunk highs, for example, and you like those things, so then go ahead, it matches up. But if you're researching, you know, graphic cards and you don't know anything about graphic cards, but you're going to go pay resale and, you know, start doing that lane, it's just like, give it a break is what I kind of think.
Yeah. I mean, jumping around, and like you said, we both acknowledge, right, that people will look like they're miserable doing it, or, you know, they're putting on a facade for it. And I was like, I made like maybe like 1,000 videos. I made a lot of videos. Like the person that videos is me. Like I'm not playing someone. Like, you know, that's just how it is. And I think, you know, knowing some of the people that make content in real life versus their YouTube persona, you know, but obviously it's harder, right? Like they're now some of the content, the videos are 20 minutes long. So it's like, you're running a show, you know, like when I watch HGTV and they're renovating homes, it's like, I'm sure the ladies, you know, on there don't fucking go home and talk to their friends like they're running a show, you know, but, you know, it was just for me personally, you know, there, like I said, all the reasons you kind of talked about is why I personally bowed out, but, doesn't mean that it's not impossible for people to still, you know,
break through,
make a go at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I took the same approach for my Twitter account. I was like, my thing was just, I wanted to get a voice out there that is totally independent, as we joked about earlier, and I could say whatever I want. Because there's people who can't say things like that. If you work at, you know, Kith or Concepts or, you know, wherever at a brand, you can't make jokes about a brand because you're gonna fuck up your seating or whatever it is. I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes people come to me and they're shit talk, even some of these YouTube people, and they'll do the shit talk to me. And I'm sure you get some of that as well too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, dude, look, trust me. There's, yeah, the shit talking on the internet has no end, especially when you're putting out your opinions, you know, and, you know, you have talked about some like incendiary. No, that's not the right word. Incendiary. Yeah. You know, those words where it's like I could write that in an essay, but I really am hoping I don't have to say it out loud. Yeah. So you go after those, the hot button topics. I was trying to get around a cliche, but here we are. And yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I get, we're jumping around a little bit more, but like when you mentioned in the beginning, like the kicks and clothes under costs, like that, those came from me thinking I was going to work for Adidas and Nike and acknowledging that I could no longer make YouTube videos while I was working for the brand. So I was like, how can I still have some sort of thing to do with sneakers and clothing that's absent, you know, me, Tyler, personally, you know? So, you know, that's what grew out of it. But yeah, I think there has to be, you know, I started following your page because I think you were going after maybe Joe LaPuma or Matthew Welty or someone. You were saying something at Complex where I was like, oh yeah, preach, say it, you know? Yeah.
No, there was, so. I think it was right when COVID hit and Adidas had done some stuff where, you know, they weren't going to pay people. And this is like really early on, like in March or something. And they weren't going to pay their rent. And I was talking about it and I said, you know, it's not like Complex is going to talk about this because right now on their YouTube, there's an Adidas branded series sponsored by Adidas with Welty and Brendan Dunn and Joe LaPuma. You know, Joe LaPuma, a guy who never wears Adidas, is in there and Superstar. So I joked about that kind of stuff. And they kind of addressed it, but not really. You know, it's so easy to say someone's a hater and that's it. But my point was like right on that you can't say anything when you're getting paid on this side. So why do I care when you have anything to say?
Right. Right. It's and you can build a brand around being authentic, even if you have a position that someone doesn't agree with, at least I can, you know, go out there and you can go out there and speak your mind. And I think that, you know, whether or not you agree or not, there's a certain level of respect. And I think some of the people that are, you know, muzzled to a certain extent, you know, might envy that for you, you know, but it's hard, right? Because not everyone is going to be able to run their own business with their own boss. And I can go on Twitter and, you know, fucking tweet anything short of like, you know, my boss isn't going to ask me, you know, Tyler, what was this tweet about? You know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's, but at the same time, like people, I think long for and want to be heard and share their opinions and talk about the things that other people aren't talking about. You know, and your page is a good example of that. And so are, you know, going back to micro communities, I mean, look at how powerful, you know, some of the micro communities are where people can get together and talk about, you know, the things that, not to make it political, but like, you know, the quote unquote mainstream news, right? Like, you know,
look at what Reddit did with GameStop, right? That one channel, whatever it was, the crypto one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. And I think what people are realizing now is you know, there's a lot of power in groups, and the internet's made it easier for people to mobilize. And the last, you know, year and close to a half now with COVID just intensified that, with everyone being, you know, stuck inside.
So in your in this economy, we talked about some of the advice and stuff that you do, but is it really like, is it still at the bottom a cook group for, you know, pools and patio heaters and that kind of stuff? I know in this hustle world there's terms that they use too. One of the ones I just learned the other day was called BOLO, be on the lookout. So it's like, it's like someone said, "Oh, Rush Limbaugh just died. BOLO, Rush Limbaugh first edition books." And it's like, is that the kind of stuff that's going on there, or is it totally different?
That's a good question. All right, so I have my Discord up right now. Let me give you the first channels, right? So we have a consulting and advice channel where people are sharing things that they're having trouble with, looking for either general help or you know, they can open up a ticket and I can, you know, like for instance, someone had a really specific question the other day about like a property they were planning on renovating and they didn't want to share the exact address, whatever. Right. So then we have investing, real estate, talking about credit, that sort of thing. But what I've done is I've built out guides based on my own experience and things I've actually done that can help people that know nothing about any of these things get a general understanding for it and then ask a specific question, you know, pertinent to them. So before anything, it's like I want to help people have a baseline skill set that I felt strongly wasn't afforded to me until I went to college, which just shouldn't be the case. That's the main draw is, yeah. You know, especially if you have, you know, if you're looking to just get a crash course for 1 month, like great. Now the cook group aspect of it, you know, kicks in with, yes, you know, we provide, you know, I have a server that, you know, pulls in just low key flips, you know, when NFTs and the NBA Top Shot was going on, we focused on that, you know, obviously, just as sneaker culture does, you know, jumping onto cards, jumping onto this, like we're sneaker culture in general, like we're pretty early to stuff in terms of the adoption curves. Right. So like, right. You know, when chlorine was selling earlier in May and selling out, like, you know, I'll post about that.
Chlorine because tablets, right?
What's that?
Chlorine tablets for the pools, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, and that's part of it. It's like, if I can give tools also while you're in here learning and networking and growing to help you make money as well. So, you know, sneaker flips, you know, doing stuff with ticket flips and concerts, you know, card calls, investing, you know, doing stuff with BrickSeek, helping people, you know, providing a monitor service. But the promise isn't, you know, join my group and I'm not trying to sell my lifestyle to someone else. What I'm trying to sell is like, hey, like there's information and things that are really important to be learning and having a grasp of that can forever change how you view things and fundamentally change, you know, how you approach business and everything else. And I think that, you know, for me, the group I think of as like almost being like a gym membership for your entrepreneurial muscle, right? Like I haven't put out that corny of a advertisement for it, but I also am not really trying to advertise the group at this point. I've kind of capped it.
We talked about the cultish language you need, and it would work.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest problem. Is it's like I know what I could do to make this group a lot larger, but I want someone to be joining based on like either they know someone that's already in the group or I've interacted with them in some way. Like the other day I had someone, you know, I'll put up on my Instagram, hey, like I have some spaces open this month, like please DM me if you're trying to understand what's going on. So like for instance, someone will hit me up from UK or Canada and ask me whether or not the group's right for them, and I'll say, no, man, to be honest with you, it's not. Like, here's an invite to the public server, though. Like, I know I have a lot of Canadians in the networking thing. Like, maybe you can ask them what group they would use, right? Or I have someone saying, hey, man, like, you know, I saw what you're doing with Come Up Store. I'm really interested in growing e-commerce. Would it be, you know, would it be worth my time this month if I joined and we could, like, work on that? And it's like, yeah, dude, like, 100%. So I want someone to have a positive experience about it. Like, I've honestly floated the idea of if I do advertise it as like, I just, it's like, I'm not out to get someone's fucking $20. Like it's right. a lot bigger than that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I
want it sounds much more adult than just a bunch of teens made a
cookie. Yeah, well, and we have I have teens in the group and older people in the group, but it's like at the like the group has an ethos of like being respectful to each other, and like I've kicked and refunded people like, yo, this is not for you. Like, this is not the place for it. Like, we don't have, you know, not even on some like super liberal, you know, high horse shit. It's like everyone has to be treating each other with respect. Like, there's not a stupid question. If you know, you're asking a question and don't get an answer, like, I am in the group every day to at least, you know, let you know that like you've been heard, you know. And I think that getting back to what, you know, we said earlier about community and you know, having a place of belonging, like, that is, I'm immensely proud of what's going on in the Discord. And it's like, now it's like some of these people, like, I feel like I know them almost,
yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, I'm obviously like running it and kind of like, you know, the owner. So it's a little bit different of an interaction, but some of these guys, you know, have, like you said, have split off into subgroups, or, you know, they're doing, you know, they're working together locally to come up with routes for different product, or they're giving each other tips on, you know, XYZ, or offering their discounts at the job that they have for someone else. So,
yep. It's also like, how much time can you invest in this, right? You, the owners of groups have to be kind of involved and visible. You can't just be sitting back and not talking and not, you know, responding to tickets or sharing stuff that you've learned lately. And there's a certain limit where you can get, where you can only do so much, right? Like, see, you can scale this up into 10 servers. I think that's what Soul Savvy does. They have like 10 different Slacks, I think.
Right.
And, you know, there's a mod in each one, or maybe the mod is in all of them and they just copy paste the same thing in each one. But, you know, people are still going to make connections with each other, but you yourself as like the founder, let's say, can't be in all 10 of them sharing right. details, right? There's only so much of you to go around.
Right. And, but that's the thing is there was especially when I think around December, there was a moment where I felt like the group reached a tipping point, because it got over 1,000 people. And it was like, as soon as that happened, I noticed that I was like, that there were people in there that were just kind of like either just kind of ruining the culture, or didn't know what was going on, or being really unsatisfied with, you know, their experience there. And I was like, man, I can't really go much higher than this without tremendously sacrificing, you know, the personal touch aspect, which I think is so important.
Right.
But yeah, dude, trust me, like, this Discord stuff is great, and it aligns really well with, you know, the fact that I'm on the computer a lot for my other work. So it works really well in tandem with the other things I have going on. And I love learning stuff and like talking to experts and figuring stuff out. And like, I'm constantly trying to just, you know, encourage and share the stuff that I have going on, even if no one, you know, like right now, like, I'm on a whole fucking tear about how, I really think Topps MLB NFT cards are undervalued. And like, there's maybe only like 5 or 6 people in my Discord right now that are like really in it with me, like we're like, you know, taking that deep dive. But it's like, I want to just be sharing it because I think these things are exciting and interesting, and
yeah, you could bounce, you know, ideas off them as well.
That, so
one of the things you talked about even here was someone can ask about scaling e-commerce, and I mentioned it in the intro, you did work at Concepts, and that was, from what I understand, one of the main things that you were doing there was scaling their e-commerce kind of. Is that accurate? That's what your job was at Concepts?
Correct. Essentially, you were taking a business that was very much on paper receipts and integrating point of sales, and then doing multi-channel fulfillment. Because at the same time, Concepts had opened the New York City store, and it also expanded to Dubai. The way Dubai distribution works is a lot different. There's actually a In the Saudi states, there's a separate distributor that kind of acts as a middleman for Nike called Sun and Sand Sports. So I didn't, that part I didn't really do too much for. But if you can imagine, you know, trying to take, you know, a very rough system for inventory and creating systems to start checking in products when they come in from the vendor so that they go up into Shopify and making sure they get photographed and setting the releases to a certain time so everything's flowing really smoothly.
Was Shopify like the one true system where that's where you enter everything and that's
No. Shopify is great, but like, you know, you can use like I think at the time we were using something called Lightspeed for inventory management because you're also doing a warehousing thing. It gets pretty complicated when you have inventory in multiple locations that's getting sent and then checked in again, and you don't obviously want to have a gap anywhere because, you know, overselling and errors are costly both on a customer service aspect and you know,
just the fees of refunding.
Yeah. So the stakes are pretty high and, it was extremely, difficult and at times, you know, kind of flying blind. Here's a good example actually. So like for instance, when you're putting in the inventory into Lightspeed so that it works with the point of sale. So this was before I think Shopify had really rolled out their point of sale. I also have no idea what these guys are using anymore for point of sale. But so it's not enough that you integrate with sales because when you're checking in the product based on where it is, it has to also apply the right local sales tax. But in New York, it's anything over $100, I think, or under $100 isn't taxed, and every dollar over is at the local sales. So like imagine having to come up with a way to properly tax product that where these systems are just have a complete blind spot to because they're not used to surveying, you know, a sneaker and clothing niche that for whatever reason, like in Massachusetts, it's like under 250, there's no sales right. tax. So it's like, you have this really, there's not many products that are like that. So trying to like solve around that was, you know, I am very glad I'm not doing those things, but oh my God, was that a trial by fire where I just, I picked up a lot of important skills, I think.
Yeah, just the tax laws in the U.S. are insane.
Yeah.
The other thing I've seen too, a lot of stores, some of the smaller stores I see, they have like inventory sitting around. I've seen like Adidas shoes that were bricks 2 years ago still on their clearance section. How does a store, how does a bigger store like Concepts deal with that kind of stuff? It's like, I'm on the outside looking in saying, you should have moved that stuff a long time ago. And like, how is it from, you know, being on the inside? Because you need turnover. That stuff is, you know, taking up space and that costs a certain amount.
Yeah, I mean, and also, you know, it's money sitting on an invoice that's unpaid. So you have a couple options. You know, you could do an RTV request and sometimes that'll happen. I remember Adidas did, maybe I wasn't working in the boutique industry when Adidas did this, but I remember when Adidas had the 4D runners and they were MSRP 350 and then overnight they went up on the website for 200. They were the same SKUs. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I was thinking like, oh my God, like imagine if I was a retailer that paid wholesale on the original MSRP and now Adidas has kind of arbitrarily dropped the MSRP. And I was thinking about like, the implications for that, because now the $200 price would be getting pretty close to what the retailer paid wholesale for, and they weren't moving to begin with. So I imagine there was probably some sort of RTV thing. So sometimes the retailers will say, hey, you have 50 grand.
RTV is return to vendor?
Return to vendor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have 50 grand, you can RTV. So like strategically, you know, and again, like I don't want to talk too much about, I'll talk generally about what boutiques would do is like strategically you'd have someone there that's returning to vendor the most fucking brick of the brick product that'll just never sell. Then if the product's outside of the MAP policy, meaning like MAP policies are basically like what dictates how much you can mark down a product and how the product.
Yeah. Like Yeezys can't be marked down.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but then like Yeezy Supply will shit on that and offer, you know, right. I think Yeezy Supply was offering like, I had a buy sheet in front of me for like 7,000 pairs of fucking 700s, right? 700s. 500s. I can't remember what the SKU was, but anyway.
I bought Yeezy Supply had their like season boots. I bought a bunch of them for like 125 off Yeezy Supply. Yeah. And those are probably all going for like 600, 700 bucks because they're so rare, but they just did that. They're like, and I could see them sitting at some retailers, usually in smaller sizes, but
they'll do like, it as well as they'll work with a larger retailer like Stadium Goods. Now, I don't think this is happening quite so much because they've gotten their inventory over controlled, but you know, they'll work with the Stadium Goods to, and Stadium Goods will sell them on their behalf because there's all kinds of rules about like, for instance, like Yeezys can't restock. Like I remember I think I fucking signed something for this one. Generally speaking, like if there's advertisement around Yeezy, the retailers will give you language that you can and can't use. And one of that is you technically, if you're an advertiser, cannot advertise a Yeezy as a restock. I forget. Right. If I go back on the affiliate sites like Solinks and stuff, like I can check what were, it was something stupid. Like you could say it was a refresh or something. But not a but my point is like, yeah, that's
even during this this COVID year, all these Yeezys restocked, but they would just put them on the site, no announcement, no nothing, and so yeah. That they were probably following that language, and it was almost like Adidas was helping both retailers and botters, because if they got you know, a restock of Wave Runners or Blue Tint or something, but they couldn't advertise it. It was going right onto the site. You know, the people sitting on monitors were quick tasking and checking it out. And so it was like, that's exactly what's happening because of these rules.
Yep. Yeah. You're probably spot on. I mean, I don't know for sure, but the brands will send, hey, you're getting a quick strike allocation. We're sending these out to your stores. You're going to get this many pairs. This is how the launch has to be communicated. I think that happened with some of the Jordan Pinnacle product. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, behind the scenes things happening. And then you get someone on Twitter that's like, oh, what? You just dropped them, like the bots. And it's like, yeah, not trying to lose our account. So, yeah, you know, deal with it.
There's also time on GOAT where a ton of these like 700 analog Yeezys were all on GOAT, and as soon as you like under retail, like way under retail.
Yeah.
Oh, that, and as soon as you bought them, it would go right into your GOAT storage.
Yeah, I meant GOAT app. GOAT app was they were picking them up from Yeezy Supply, and then I think the offer was like they were like 40% or 50% off if you took, but you had to take all, and it was like 13,000 SKUs. I was actually working with the dude trying to get the financing to do them all. But obviously the bigger companies just kind of swooped on them. But but yeah, your point is they have to have a buffer there. You know, they can sell them to GOAT under retail, but they can't advertise them on the website that way.
And the same with these 380s, the more brick Yeezy ones, they'll be on the site for max 2-3 days. And then I guess the agreement is, well, we'll pull them and return to vendors. Okay for that, because you don't want to. You don't want a Yeezy sitting on the site for, you know, 2 years, like some of those old Adidas products. And I always joke that sometimes those shoes are actually the most rare because they're so brick that nobody bought them and then they were pulled. But then a lot of the times they get sent to GOAT and stuff for under retail just to get rid of them. So even though they're rare on feet, they're under retail on the apps.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, like whether or not something, you know, rare, like a lot of the boutiques will have some insights as to how much product's actually being made. And, you know, sometimes it's surprising to me, you know, what people perceive to be limited versus what really is limited. Like the J Balvin Jordan 1, like that was a very, very limited drop. But, you know, resale just didn't really reflect how limited of a drop that was, even, you know, being in Jordan 1.
Yeah, it's like, am I allowed enough to wear this shoe? If it was a mostly, you know, cream shoe, it could probably go up to 1,000, right? Wearability, I think, plays a big part in there. But
that's
probably
point.
$600-$700 right now, right?
But it's you know, you can just imagine, like, it's like if somehow my mom, like, you know, worked at distribution and I had information around, you know, where allocation was going, you know, it's like you can imagine you'd be able to make some really smart purchases as a reseller if you had that information, you know. But my mom doesn't work at Nike, so it's hard for me to make those conclusions anymore. So
I always said that for retailers, I say they always care when it's their own drop. You know, you probably weren't there at Concepts because I think some of these dunks and stuff came before and maybe after. And I know like bot protection and stuff, it became more widespread probably after you left Concepts. But like what is the thought process at a brand of like, okay, we're not going to care about this easy drop, just put it on the site. But if it's got our name on it, you know, it's, there's marketing, there's more care and thought put towards it.
I mean, I also like besides Concepts, like I have a decent amount of like, you know, thought process with Kith and some of these other guys. The boutiques just want the product to sell out. I don't think they give a fuck. I mean, they can, they, like Bodega obviously did an interesting job with implementing some of the new bot stuff, but I don't think that that shoe is really being gassed up enough where it really made a difference. I don't know how many people were trying to bot for that particular shoe. So like there's like a certain PR, you know, aspect to saying, hey, we care about botting to a certain extent, like Union's doing a good job with that. But you know, these guys just want to sell. Now it's a little bit different.
You can only care so much.
Right. And also like to a certain extent, like if I'm Bodega and I ordered a size, you know, my size curve and I got 5,000 pairs of those, you know, depending on the drop, you know, Bodega might be sitting there being like, damn, should we like, you know, if it doesn't sell through, should we pull it? You know, should we pump fake the sellout to maintain the brand? I mean, I know that some boutiques did that because I've been offered boutique collaboration product that never hit any other doors in bulk. So the pump fake sellout was like such a big thing. I think early ASICS, Ronnie Fogg days, like that was huge. You know, perception was such a big thing. So like the retailers just wanted to see the products sell and if the resale price, and they wanted to see the resale prices as high as possible afterwards. And then based on how things sold through, you might be able to make decisions on how much more to order next time, you know?
Yeah. I think that's what Bodega did this time, because normally New Balance collabs are limited to like 2,000 or so or 1,000, and this Bodega one, you know, it's, they have had Dunk ones and they've had you know, a bunch of three versions of their 1997 something with New Balance, but this time it seemed like stock was probably like 20,000 just based on order numbers. So,
well, you know, the other thing is you can manipulate the order numbers. I noticed that I had an assumption they were doing that based on the email that they sent. The way that they sent the email, I was like, man, were they trying to do that to like fuck up Gmail? Like, I also don't really know how Gmail accounts work, like when you're like farming a lot of them or whatever it is. But like, I noticed when they were doing like the email was from like Robot Free and not their email in a subdomain. I was like, huh.
That was probably 20, for the, they created the second site.
Yeah. So like, here's some background on New Balance. The most product I can think of for New Balance, like running through, would be like a big New Balance drop. No, actually, it would be be about 5,000 pairs per colorway. The most I've ever seen, because there was also a time where people, I think their boutiques were also really interested in being able to hide stock, because I know on Shopify, you know, people could see when product was loaded up, and then someone would say, hey, like, let's not bot this release because, oh my God, they're putting, you know, this many units up. That was definitely
These new Shopify sites is usually a new site just starts at order 1,000. So that's where the number 20,000 came from, because whoever ordered the last 7.5 that was on the site, their order number was 20,000 or, you know, 21,000. So that is what I saw. I didn't, you know, firsthand see that. So they could probably set the site to start at 5,000 or 4,000.
Right. Like in my own Shopify store right now, I could very easily, you know, manipulate it to make it look like we're selling through more or less. I would be shocked if for the Made in USA, they ran 20,000. That would be really pushing their capabilities, at least based on what I know at New Balance. That would be a huge invoice. They'd be looking at whatever 20,000 times like maybe $98 or $100 is. I'm not great at math, but I mean, that'd be a fat invoice even for Bodega.
Yeah, I think Undefeated did that too, with their 97 pack that they released recently. They had just a ton of them.
Yes. And
they had no bot protection because they were like, we just need this to move. So We're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna ask Shopify to kill proxies and stuff like that. We're gonna just let it
The owner of Undefeated really wants Undefeated to kind of be in the same territory as Supreme, and I've always thought that they haven't milked their. They have a really special relationship with Nike Sportswear. If you look at how many collaborations they've gotten versus other American boutiques, I mean, for a while it was like Bodega got a Footscape. You know, obviously Nike's pushing the Dunk right now, so that's changed it. But it was like, you know, Undefeated was the only game in town for a Nike collab outside of SB. So, you know, I think they're just trying to maximize that. I mean, can you imagine, like, right, Kith? Yeah, Kith hasn't done, like, an Air Max officially, right? But it's like, can you imagine if some of these bigger boutiques and you know, got a Nike Sportswear collab out of Dunk, like, it would just be, it'd be bananas, you know? Right. So I think Undefeated is really just trying to maximize. I personally have no idea what that relationship is, but it's very unusual.
No, 100%. Well, Tyler, that was basically all I had. Was there anything else on your end?
No, not really. This is pretty cool. It's fun to be able to kind of talk and share some of this stuff and, you know, share my experience, and I'm constantly amazed at you know, what the next kind of generation of people are doing in this space, and you know, I think it's cool. So
yeah, no, I've always, like I said, I watched your videos back then, here and there. I'm not a 100% YouTuber, but you were always one of the ones that was more authentic on there. And I did see you, you know, chop it up with haters and stuff like that too. But, and you held your own. And yeah, and it's funny. I'm 43, but I'm considered the next generation, I guess. But really, most of the times I'm just tweeting out jokes, and that's 100% what it's based around. I'm not looking out here. I'm not really out here chasing a bag.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for the love of the game and not the gain, I guess.
Like, yeah,
the BC the 10.
when you're building a passion project like that, that's the way you have to go into it, because otherwise you're either going to end up hating doing this thing that you at one time loved, or, you know, pretending. And I think that's really scary. So, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast. Obviously, I have no idea if people make it to the end. Maybe I could say this, and I should have said this in the beginning, but you know, I think you reach people that I don't, and you know, I like I said, I've been making content for quite some time, so you know, it's cool to reach new people. And also, you know, maybe someone had a you know, thoughts or feelings towards me one way or the other, and here in this podcast they can get a little bit more you know, insight into who I am as a person and the things I stand for, because, you know, that, like you said, this is it's who I am. And you know, it's been really, really fun. I'm very, 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 very fortunate that so many of these opportunities have been afforded to me from fucking, you know, $100 tennis shoes. So it's kind of cool, the arc.
Yeah, so great. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
So that's it for the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to Tyler for taking time out and talking with me. I was thinking about, you know, I need like a sign off for the podcast. So I have to brainstorm a couple of ideas, you know, something, you know, something corny, sneaker related, or I don't know. I can just tell you to go fuck yourself. So that's the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Go fuck yourself.